So Gina is going to join in via.
Anna will be videoing in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Anna's videoing in?
No, Gina is.
Oh.
And possibly KZ.
That is, yes.
Oh, if KZ videos in, then we'll have a quorum.
KZ, yeah. Yes, she is.
She's going to number her.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, rep.
And she's been on the.
That's good because.
Solid.
Watch.
Do I want that? Is that what you're asking me?
Do you want to kind of actually
at this point? Have you ever seen my office? It's covered in paper. So, oh, it's that small. I thought it was the whole thing. Yeah. I thought it was this. Thank you. Biomedical engineering and chemical engineering.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Wow.
I run four companies.
It will be. In a minute. If I quit kicking off the. Warning, beware.
2002.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Thankfully, it's one of the old style, and it's not going to be pulled much. Came out through MIT.
CJC, CIC, and Campus Welfare Committee.
Are you on all of them?
Ex officio, because executive board.
From 2 hours north of here, I grew up on a dairy farm.
Because I'm on the executive committee, like Gabe.
So Jeremy, Anna, and I, we are ex officio non-voting members of our three committees.
Oh, that's different than the other assemblies. That's in the charter.
It is in the bylaws.
In the bylaws.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm actually
that's different than the other assemblies. All right.
Well, you're very different from the other assemblies.
Jeremy, do you have the ability to add here?
Yes.
Will you do that?
Yes.
Thank you. That would be really helpful.
Although the position won't. Ex officio.
If it's been that way in perpetuity, then it should exist.
It hasn't. It was changed last year.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
I threw it in.
You're supposed to be able to enter ex officio and then keyboard position.
I wanted to bring all my friends.
Can you add
executive committee?
Actually, out of curiosity.
Or add positions?
I don't think I have access to add positions.
Sorry.
So if you wanted to give it to me.
I'll take that too.
What?
The ability to add people to committees.
No,
I don't.
Though having that talk
as the chair of the university, you have the ability to do that not only for UA but all UA
position
committees. If you don't have that,
I don't.
Or voting, and then set the associated position.
I'll check right now.
And I guess while we're waiting for a quorum, we might as well handle these.
Yeah,
are you
I can fix that for you.
What operations?
Operations,
yes.
Yeah,
I am for the
SEC.
For UA.
Yeah. I've been using the website
constantly. Yeah. I'm also a Drupal developer by trade, so I've been kind of looking at the going, okay, there's some, it's definitely an improvement, but there can be improvement upon your improvements to go good.
All right, so.
Yes, CJ, we would love you to come in and.
Login.
Sit down when you're, you know, in your free time.
Yeah. Right now, I'm a team of three, and my counterpart is going on to a new job.
Now it doesn't matter.
And my boss, who's supposed to be hiring for that, just went out on paternity leave. So I am doing three jobs right now.
Oh, my God.
So it's going to be a little bit.
Yeah.
At least until my boss do it.
I can't log in.
Okay.
Is this how one logs in?
Yeah.
Kim Soder, how are you? Welcome.
Then
I will figure out
who do that.
Then
I will.
It's my recommendation.
Okay. All right, we'll fix both. What's your preference?
Yes, I
know
that.
Open time.
Way because grads haven't formally appointed anyone yet.
Yes.
We got this one in law school.
Right,
thank you.
Oh, wow.
Happy day. Okay, we can go.
Welcome.
You're my TA for comp law.
Oh, wait. Well,
there
no.
is no
here.
Escape.
We're going to take.
Oh, no. Gabe, you're doomed.
Why?
He has no heart.
Can we just like put it out in the middle or something? Arbitrary.
Okay, well, we do have a quorum in that case. Charlie, you're all set?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. I can send you their names.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Well, considering that we have a quorum and the time is 4:38, I'm calling this meeting of the University Assembly's Code Judicial Committee to order. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. So first on our agenda is approval of minutes. Terrell was kind enough to give us minutes for both our September 6th and September 20th, or September 13th and September 20th meetings today. Considering that we just got them now, I would ask that we table them so that members who are not present or members who are unable to be here today would be able to have a chance to look at them and then vote on next time. That being said, are there any comments or concerns if you've had a chance to look at them for the past 30 seconds?
Do you want typos?
That would be great, too.
Three.
Which one?
Under three.
Oh,
so 3.3.
Okay.
Be too far reaching. 2-0.
Ah, 2-0. Thank you.
And number 22. Pointing out and organization in Charlie.
Got it. So be right. There. Thank you. Okay, any other comments or concerns with those? Hearing none.
If you go through that it's not FOLA, please who's absent.
Oh yes, thank you for reminding. Yes, actually. For these, and this is not the clerk's fault, the roster have not been updated to reflect that Kendall Carr is the new judicial administrator. So A. Oliphant is no longer a member of the committee. Rather, it would be K. Kendall Carr, so K. Carr.
She was here.
Yeah, she was here on the 20th and not there on the 13th. There absolutely is. This is one, and the other one will be right here. Do you have an agenda?
I do.
Okay, fantastic. So, okay, we've fixed that. Any other comments, concerns on the minutes? Hearing none, is there a motion to table those for until the next meeting?
Motion to table.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent? Hearing none, the minutes are tabled for the next meeting. And also, if you have not yet received April 25th or September 6th, those I will include those in being tabled. That moves us on to the next item of our business, which is the housekeeping changes to the campus code of conduct. For those who are the guests who are joining this afternoon, as well as for those who have had schedule conflicts that preclude them from attending prior, I will run through briefly where we are, and then we'll move into discussion. So the stack of code changes that you have before you are meant to be quote unquote non-controversial, low-hanging fruit. After working with University Counsel's office, there's a hope among the administration to go through and revamp the campus code of conduct to make it more readable and more understandable. Its current incarnation was written primarily by law faculty, and as someone who is a law student and I've read textbooks also written by professors, I can say the similarities are striking, but it's hard, it is difficult for a layman to understand. And therefore, our hope with this was to go through, handle low hanging fruit, the areas that were urgent, otherwise non-controversial, or need or align with our past practice. After doing so, our goal is then to do this and move on to a code revision. And actually, any of our guests would like copies. We have extras.
I would like copies, yes.
Absolutely. So that is the code change. That'll be able to okay, fantastic. So, of course. So, okay. In that case, so our goal was to do that and then move on to the general code overhaul. As those present likely know, considering the events of last week, we were charged by the University Assembly to begin looking at hate speech and its role in the campus code of conduct. That being said, considering that these are so close to completion, it is our hope to finish these out and then move full barrel into the hate speech issue. And our hope actually is to, if possible, pass these today so they maybe go through, because there are code versions in here that are time sensitive. So are there any comments or questions on just that initial overview?
You said pronoun these, you want to pass these.
Yes.
The whole hanging fruit?
Yes, so that would be the wrap that this whole packet.
Yeah.
And now that we've done that, if no other objection, I'll run through each thing briefly and provide background and context. We can stop after each one to have discussion, and then if there's any other comments that I miss, we can go into that. So the first proposed change is regarding the suspension length and statute of limitations for university organizations. In essence, the current language states that the statute of limitations in the code is 1 year. There is provision to extend for 6 months if necessary, but there is a concern raised by Michelle, the judicial administrator, that that 1 year was insufficient to allow for long-term issues such as hazing to be brought out, and therefore we considered extending it. And further, also that the period of suspension for a university registered organization can be no longer than 1 year. So in essence, we can go up to 1 year, or you must be expelled. After speaking with a number of community members, as well as members of the Greek system, who are not on this code, but support it nonetheless, there is a general agreement that allowing the hearing board's discretion to decide should a suspension go 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, all the way up to 5 years, allows more flexibility instead of, in essence, having a 1 year hard ceiling, or otherwise we have to suspend you if we don't want to, or expel you, or dismiss if you no longer going to be associated with the university. And these changes are to effectuate that. Michelle, do you have anything you'd like to add for those?
I'm in full support of both of these.
Thank you. Are there any comments, questions, or concerns regarding this portion?
So you're specifically talking about page 2 of the highlighted portion.
That is correct, yes.
And the motion to approve these changes in order.
We're going to... It's technically in order, but we're going to drive. Our goal is to go through individual, and then hopefully, if we are comfortable with language as a whole, we can prove them, and then they'll be formatted in the resolution template and put on the agenda of the UA. But at this point, we're going to try and go through each because there are some things that are less.
Approve at the end.
Correct. Yes. Which I saw.
Can we do it for a proposal? I think that probably makes a little bit more sense.
I think we should chop it up. I understand what you're trying to do for, but I think we could. There are probably some that will move quickly, and some that will get stalled on.
Thank you, Mr. Crowder.
So to do this procedurally, after we go through them all, there should be a motion to split to divide the question, and then after we divide the question by change, then we can vote on each question individually, but still send it to the UA in one resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Kaufman. In terms of this logistics, if we were to take a vote just to approve the section, I would consider it closed, and then we would vote on the entire thing at the end in terms of going through the logistical split. So with that being said, and that based on what we're deciding, that motion to approve this first section would be in order. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Is there any dissent? Hearing none, because this is an actual action, I'd ask that all voting members in favor, please raise their placard or hand. All those opposed, and all those who would like to abstain, chair abstains. By a vote of 4-0-1, that is considered accepted. Moving on to proposed language to address immediate suspension for non-compliance of sanctions, page 3 of the handout. This is a change brought about because the current language in the code states that if you do not comply with a sanction from a university, or in essence comply with a sanction given out by the Office of OJA or the hearing boards, you are in essence to be immediately suspended. That on its face has been brought up as overly harsh, and the idea here is to allow the JA discretion in that regard, and therefore changing may shall to may. Further, adding a new violation, which is to not refuse to comply with any valid penalty or remedy dispensed by the Office of Judicial Administrator and or the University Hearing or Review Boards, so that instead of being charged with obstruction, which has been the stopgap measure, you would be charged with failure to comply with a valid penalty, and then sanctions or other issues could be assessed against you as necessary. Michelle, you're first in the speakers list.
The red is new language, and I understand that in the working session last week that Jill talked about this. The only thing that I would say is that it seems to miss the idea of a presidential appeal.
Okay.
So if a presidential appeal applies sanctions or remedies, this provision currently would not allow this provision to enforce that.
Thank you for catching that. Actually, I was reading that version and I apologize for missing that. So that, in this case, the solution would be to change it. So to refuse to comply with any valid penalty or remedy dispensed by the Office of Judicial Administrator, comma, the University Hearing or Review Boards, comma, or the president, or the president of the university. And we can fix that language.
Or if it's just a penalty or remedy dispensed from the
department. That would also work.
Remove valid.
No, so it would be, if I understand it correctly, it would be to refuse to comply with any valid penalty or remedy given pursuant to the campus code of conduct.
The only question with that is, what is valid then? Because my thought is, then are you creating the opportunity for an individual to say that sanction, even though it's completed through adjudication, is no longer valid, and then are you reopening the matter? So, because I wasn't here last week, I'm not quite sure where that language came up for. So,
absolutely. And I provide context. The Professor Benzel, when the original language that you had come forward with was a point out of the office or the Rampos and regulation, the maintenance of public order section, in terms of failure to comply with a university official. That's actually an area of the code that I've received a number of comments about. And after discussing with you and hearing really what we were trying to get at, the hope was to try and narrow it so that what you, in essence, violating a duly given sanction is a violation, but not opening it up wider than that. So that was an attempt to cabinet, but you're open to all options. Jeremy.
So I think the language that was just proposed to remove OJA, hearing board and president, yes, replace it with code of conduct, actually includes the concept of being valid, because
yes,
it's processed through the code of conduct. So
yes,
I think that solves the problem by changing the language.
Okay, and so to restate, I'll take that as a, is there a form, that a form motion to amend it?
Yes.
Okay, that is a form. Second? Okay. Thank you. And then so the language is being amended to make sure that's correctly. M, to refuse to comply with any penalty or remedy given pursuant to the campus code of conduct.
So we definitely want to take out the word valid.
Yes.
Because if it's pursuant to the code of conduct,
it would be valid.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
That's good.
Yes. So, Terrell, do you have that?
And that's the clear language to get into the word.
To comply with argument given
refuse to comply with any penalty or remedy given pursuant to the campus code of conduct.
Do you want to discuss the table?
Yeah, you're welcome.
Come in, we'll squeeze. There's even an empty chair over here.
Okay, so is there any discussion or comments or questions on that motion? Hearing none, the speaker is exhausted. The chair puts the question to restate the motion. The motion is to amend the proposed language to read, M, to refuse to comply with any penalty or remedy given pursuant to the campus code of conduct. We'll stop at the end of that. All those in favor, voting members, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed, all abstentions, chair abstains. By 4-0-1, that is amended. And moving back into discussion on this portion, are there any other comments or concerns regarding this provision? Hearing none, when the speaker is exhausted, the chair puts before the assembly, approving this, move forward. So all those in favor approving this segment, moving on, please raise your hand or placard. All those opposed. All of them abstain. Abstain by 4-0-1. This provision is accepted. Moving on to the next provision. This is the language regarding the proposed language for the role of non-matriculated minors. This comes to us as a request from the Office of Risk Management. And that is because the way the code is currently written, currently enrolled, the definition of student is someone who's currently enrolled taking classes at the university. That is read very broadly, such that if you are, and after hearing from risk management, if you are, in their words, a 5 or 8-year-old taking a soccer camp or doing a day class at Cornell, conceivably you are covered by the code and its procedural protections. That is, I would argue, not really what the intent of the code is, because in this case, where the remedy is, it's a one-day camp, you misbehave, your child, you're sent home. And that was the goal, was to carve that out. That being said, the issue that was before this committee was the edge cases, so that would be the individuals who are high school students taking classes at Cornell. For instance, if their college high school students are able to take classes at the university during their day in high school, they will come to Cornell, take a class, go back. The concern raised by Professor Liebowitz, and actually I have a comment from Carl Reed, was that those high school students being visually indistinguishable from Cornell students, the concern is by carving them out, you run the risk of their free expression and otherwise free exercise provisions, because the code contains the protections for those as well. And that was where the committee was discussing. But the general idea is that, at the very least, was not going to refer elementary and middle school students. They would be removed from the jurisdiction of the code so long as they are subject to a written policy, written behavioral policy or procedure. After speaking with management, any program that exists on this campus has such a policy or procedure, so that is more of a safeguard that wouldn't, in theory, would not have to be used frequently. And I will also read a comment from Professor Liebowitz, who is unable to attend this afternoon, on that topic. That would be, regarding the proposed language defining student, page 4 of the amendments, we could add after the phrase policy or procedures, something along the lines of, but all persons enrolled and are taking classes at the university shall be protected by the rights guaranteed and then noting sections of the code detailing free speech and other relevant protections. So that is her take. I also, upon reading the code, did notice a section that brings up under the jurisdictional statutes, it states that the term student shall be interpreted to mean any person, whether or not incidentally on the university payroll, who is currently registered at the university as a degree candidate, but B, a special student in the undergraduate division. And it would appear that that is R because that may include those high school students by definition, as I would argue they may be special students. That being said, special student may also be a term of art, which I don't necessarily have prior in front of me, but I didn't believe it was important to bring it in front of this committee. So are there any comments, questions on that?
I'm not really sure if it's a comment or a question. And in prior conversations, I'm aware of the distinctions we're trying to make here, but it's never been clear what the difference between being enrolled and taking a class is. You can do a lot of things extramurally. I know what Risa is trying to guarantee, but I also am having trouble applying that to minor students.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm having trouble reconciling someone who is taking a class but not actually fully affiliated with Cornell by any means, which many people do. Most of them are of age and responsible for themselves. The ones that are underage and not responsible for themselves in many cases, I find this to be problematic. So it is understandable that we would want to protect a person's right to free speech. However, I just find myself struggling with the language that recently poses.
Thank you. Other comments or concerns? Someone had also brought up the idea that to narrow the definition so the exclusion is elementary, middle, and high school students in the first and second year, so that, in essence, students who are juniors or seniors, if they're affiliated with the Cornell incidentally, would still remain under the code, is a way to, in essence, kick the can until we went to the full code overhaul, but still doing a stopgap. That is an option that has been brought forward here.
So a couple of thoughts there, and the first thing I was kind of twigging on was the idea of minors versus adults, but I'm already seeing the issues that generates, because we have Cornell students that are under 18. So the part of my question is, why are we carving out anyone from protections if they're enrolled in classes, even if they are here for a short period of time, if they require those protections? The other is, when we're looking at, never mind, actually I see the issue there. So I guess the real question is, what is the risk to Cornell caused by leaving provisions in the code of conduct so that it would cover them in the case that they weren't covered by some other document? And that's kind of the direction that I would lean towards.
Point of information?
Yes.
Whose jurisdiction are they under right now?
They would be, those individuals are technically, although not always practically, under the code of conduct.
Oh, I mean, sorry, if we were to take it out.
So they would be subject to the best way to articulate it would be if say this is your agreement, I'm going to come take a class, or I'm a 10-year-old, my parents get an agreement to come have me take a class at Cornell. At the bottom it says, you are expected to do X, Y, and Z, and if you don't, the penalty is being sent home, you may or not get a refund. So in essence, as long as there's some written statement of how you should comport yourself and the policy for that, they would then be pulled out of the code and put into that. And next on the speaker's list is Michelle. I've got Chief Zoner after that. I suspect Michelle, actually, in terms of risk management, I would be happy to be there. I suspect Michelle will bring up parts of it, so what is yours?
So that was why when we looked at this language with risk management as a proposal, we were very specific in saying elementary, middle school, high school, one equivalents, because we knew that we had some matriculated minors who, you know, are 15 and brilliant. One of the reasons is that our relationship to a student who is in elementary school who's here for like a summer camp or taking dual degree programs is very different. The courts have said historically the rights of a student, because, for example, FERPA, actually, there's no clear definition of where that regards. So the educational environment, educational record belongs to them. while they're still a student there. And so the reason that, you know, we want to be able to call a parent or, you know, like summer camps, be like, your kid's drinking underage, you need to come bring them home because they're not ready for this. Because if the way that it currently works under the code, the way that it's meant to look like is that, let's say that student is drinking the last day of their classes, right? They're celebratory, they're going back to the dorms. What that means is that I have knowledge that they're going to be done with this program. So what I have to do is I need to notate their transcript and says conduct charges are pending because I can't adjudicate the case and give them all the procedural rights in the code, which can take up to 9 months when we look at the length of this. And so we have a student who, instead of getting some transfer credit in the way that they probably should have, or maybe they get one class because they completed before the alcohol violation, we are penalizing a high school student in the regards of saying, like, you agree to this program restrictions, no need to do that. But I think that the biggest thing is that our relationship to elementary, middle school, high school student, even if they're incidentally taking classes, is dual enrollment. Their conduct is adjudicated by the specialists who know conduct in that setting, right? And so the idea that we don't want to overstep the boundaries of what parental, guardian, or that school setting needs to do. And so the reason why it's a challenge for us and why it's so important is we're technically not following our university policies. And so if somebody wanted to challenge the lessons in court, we're putting ourselves up for risk and liability.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that a little bit, when we have minor students here, there are different policies, quite frankly, that already apply to them. Those are, I'm going to call them extreme minors. let's call them the 16 and under set, truly non-traditional entering freshmen. They have generally have to have some special dispensations to get into dormitories, residence halls. They're entering, and some of them are prevented from doing so. I know recently we enrolled a 12-year-old, and that's not a reasonable environment for a 12-year-old to be in, regardless of how brilliant they are. Parents agreed to it. That's part of what Cornell negotiates on the onset with various minor children. So there is already a background notation for that. The second thing that I have to put out there is the code also provides resource for individuals for the case they're going to have an adjudication come towards them that, well, just to be quite frank, they haven't earned. They're not enrolled. They're not paying tuition. They're paying for a class, but they're not paying all that rounded effort that really is supporting all those resources, whether it be health resources or JCC or any one of a number of different things that then take resources away from people who have, you know, enrolled in that respect. And that's just a philosophy thing. I'm just going to put it out there. What harm is it? Someone could definitely say, look, I'm paying this much tuition. I can't get an appointment with XYZ because somebody here, you know, took a class and decided to drink their way into trouble.
Right. And on that, judicial codes counselors have said in the past in their reports to the assemblies that for some of the lowest level issues that they are, again, there's sometimes more citations than they're able to represent. So for some of the very, very lowest levels, occasionally it's either there are issues with staffing, so that is not just a hypothetical. Next on the speakers list is Richard.
So all that seems reasonable to me. The only thing is the freedom of expression. Kids underage drinking is a violation, but that's not freedom of expression. So the question is whether in these the codes that are applicable to a high school student, there is explicitly a statement that says that freedom of expression is guaranteed to them as individuals. That would be the requirement of this.
Thank you. You're amazing.
And that feeds right into some what I was going to say. That makes a whole lot of sense. Like, yeah, I kind of think I had that at one point before and then lost it again. But and it comes back to that, if they already have these policies and procedures in place, then the code doesn't apply, which I think is great because, and it requires that in place. And separate from this decision, we can then at some later time to talk about and look at what procedures we have in place for building and approving those separate procedures to make sure that they live up to the standards of Cornell. So I think that's probably the right tack to take on this. This is the right language for this, And then at some later point, we need to find a way to ensure that these separate procedures that are brought in by third parties or whatever organizations meet some kind of standards for performance, so that they're not something we would find offensive.
Actually, that one of risk management's points was if there are areas where we bring in what is equivalent to a third-party contractor, that be a sports coach or someone else, and they bring in separate terms and other things, which are vetted by Cornell. But the varying layers, the idea was also partially, A, if you're a 10-year-old, the code is not built for you.
Right.
And also the legal liability of being under 18. They're also the last, actually, but in terms of when this goes through the UA, we can also add a clause. The officers management has been incredibly cooperative. We can even ask for the conduct procedures for those students who are, in essence, the high school students who are taking classes, just so we can look at them for our own interest. And then if we'd like to make a resolution recommending X, Y, or Z, we can do that. Next on the speaker list is Gabe.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. We could theoretically, I mean, so like if we write this out of, like if we write them out of the code now, that's like, I mean, that's pretty much it. Like we're not going to be visiting this issue again for a couple of years. And so at the very least. And so if we write them out now, we might want to put a clause in there that says, like, well, we still have the right to review the policies that they will be subject to, just to make sure that they're not being
standards,
you know. Yeah, just to make sure that there's like a minimum level of standards. And so I think that, like, if we want to write something like that in, now would be the right time to do it, either at this committee meeting or in the main UA.
Right. Is the code the right place for that, though? Because it seems like what we're talking about are separate documents. We're creating a carve out for people covered by separate documents that are an equivalent to the code for those high schoolers. But I'm going to use high schoolers just as a general term for those high schoolers. There should be some oversight on those as well, but I don't know that the code is the right place for particular. That's the question.
If they put it somewhere else, then they can just change it.
And that actually a suggestion that the committee members should consider is we could add the UA's charter has a section of the responsibilities is authorized by the administration. We could craft language that says the UA has X, Y, or Z, or the CJC has the ability to look at these policies and combine, in essence, have it linked with this and have a non-severability clause saying, in exchange for doing this, we would ask that we have this authority. Again, the administration has to agree to that, but that is enough. Michelle?
I think the one thing that maybe I would echo maybe Jeremy's point, that I don't know if the code is the right thing. So we're looking at the amount of these. This is camps that start in March. You know, they do a summer camp that starts in April. I mean, so if there had to be a clause like that, and that's what they should move to, I think that the way that the CJC and the University Assembly is structured, I don't know if you would meet that in time. Because, for example, these are usually advertised on the websites, and these websites and sites fill up pretty quickly. So you would be looking at almost every single meeting having to review that. And it's not my agenda, so I don't have a preference in that way. But I also think there seems to be a little bit of lack of trust for the people who are doing this on a policy side. And if there's a policy perspective, there's more than one check and balance in what the university does, right? There's the court system. There's lots of other ways in which decisions that we make as a university are checked. And so I know that this is asking for kind of a big ask for some of that regard. So I just think if you're moving towards the idea of putting some restrictions on the ability for people who are running the summer camps to do their jobs, I think you need to demonstrate the flexibility and the speed in which you'd be able to do this.
I'm thinking. But my comment sort of has to go to the double jeopardy type of thing where most of these high school students are under their own code already.
Okay.
So that drives the expectations of their behaviors, even some of them off campus. I would have to, we're going to pull that code and see if that's up to our standard. I mean, how deep do we go here? I think what we're trying to do is say, if you've got rules, you've got to follow them. If you don't have rules, you're going to fall under the code.
And the code does have a double jeopardy provision in it.
Right, except that not for other codes necessarily that we're not tied to.
Correct.
And to me, that's kind of enough for a start. I see us being concerned about something that I have not experienced here, not to say that it couldn't happen, but I think there is an opportunity to build in a person's Bill of Rights, which we've talked about doing in the past, that takes care of students, minors, adults, whoever, that you should not be discriminated against because of. And that goes to the other piece of this conversation that we've got challenged before us in the hate speech and whatnot, of how to parse that out in a way. So we're trying to combine the two in this one thing of like, whose rules are we following that in this particular instance? And I think we have clear-cut rules. Noble of us to try to go over all those clear-cut rules, but quite honestly, there are going to be different rules that may not abide by the freedom. They may not have freedom of speech for some programs that they've got. And they might have to make the choice whether or not they want to enter into that program because of that. But the rules are forward. And in the places where their rules are forward, we'll get it.
And that actually, in partially, Michelle, in parts of that, there was speaking with members of the former members of CJC from last term, there was a concern that bringing up when 6.4 was carved out of the code, the 6.4 revision process, there were areas, even way back when I was chair of the assembly 2 years ago, there were times when things were done and we were supposed to be notified under policy 4.1 and we weren't, which led to a hesitancy of, if we're carving things out, it's a question of are we citing sayonara? And then they go forever. So that being said, there might be an option. And what I was postulating with the UA charter amendment would say, the UA reserves the right to look at them. So it's not that they have to come before us, but that if we hear, oh, this one organization has a policy that's especially off the wall.
It's discriminatory.
Yes.
Let's call it discriminatory.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. We can then, it's in our charter as a given authority from the president, that we can go and pull it.
Right.
And we're not, again, we're letting organizations act as they need to. In essence, we're trusting the university, but we're having that verification to check that, okay, if we believe or we hear something's off the wall, we can pull it, look at it, and then look and then handle that as it comes up. Richard, actually, Jeremy, did you have something?
Yeah, and it was pretty much echo what you just said, Matt, which was we already have things in place too that allow us if something bizarre off the wall. I'm actually now that we've talked about this, I'm satisfied mm-hmm. with this language. But if we had something bizarre off the wall come up, we have abilities within the UA already to request information mm-hmm. and follow up on that as a wholly separate thing. Mm-hmm. I think we're doing well with what we have.
Next up is Richard.
Yeah, I'm fine as well. Just make a note. Mm-hmm. I think this suggestion about revisiting their question of responsibilities and rights in a bill of rights is a good idea. And so I would make terrible decisions.
Sharpen
make a note that we didn't move to formally do this, but it was a strong suggestion that in the revision of the code we revisit this. I do think that's the right place to put it. So that said, I'm done.
Thank you. And actually, with the CJC, the UA and CJC looked into a community bill of rights 2 years ago. It didn't get off the ground for a whole number of reasons after realizing the scope of it. But that being said, considering this committee is hoping to do a code overhaul to look at that, I think is prudent. And partially to Jeremy's point, if the committee is going to exercise this, I would advise and recommend you consider adding something to a UA document somewhere. For instance, the university policy on holiday decorations is technically under our purview, but up until 2 years ago, everyone had forgotten about it. Isn't that policy mentions we're in it? Our documents have no mention. It's my intent to go add it to our charter to fix that. But the fact that policy was given to us, and yeah, again, same idea. It's done by someone else, but we have the ability to look at it and sign off on it. It was forgotten about. So if we're going to do this, I would encourage us, likely in our charter, because it has some imprimatur and administration which agree to it, to say we have this is somewhere that we retain at least the ability to look at it. And also that someone looking in 10 years would go, oh, what is that? And it's not going to be something that falls, gets forgotten about once all of us have rotated off the committee. Any other comments, questions, or concerns? Actually, Dale.
So maybe I'm reading this completely wrong, but by putting it in 2A and not in the heading of 2, isn't it possible that you could read this, that middle schoolers, high school, and elementary school students aren't exempt from being classified as a student under 2B? So they're free from not being enrolled in classes and being recognized as a student, but they're still, I think this could be read that if they're using university facilities, they're a high school student, they could still be classified as a student. I'm just curious why you didn't put it right in the heading of 2.
You're missing an and or perhaps after the letter A to tie it into mm-hmm. B and C. There's an or after C.
I think the goal was, because looking at C, the goal is to keep them from suspension. So I think the goal was to try and keep them in. The question, of course, I think that's a very good point to raise.
You might reverse the order. So you make B, A, then.
I mean, I just don't know why you're just added to the list up top, not faculty members or other university employees or students who are currently middle schoolers, high schoolers, or elementary schoolers. And then that exempts them from the entire list.
Mm-hmm. I see. So instead of, so as it's moving it, so the number two would read.
Yes, move that whole yellow to follow.
Shall be interpreted. Yes.
Not faculty members, comma, other university employees, comma.
With the exclusion, yes, if they are. And then, so if they are, so it's still leaving A, B, and C to go through, but that is a blanket carve out.
A thank long you. Sentence.
Yeah, but it's a list.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
That's what happens when you have to list people.
Just to clarify, were we talking about just like people taking classes at the university or just like sports camps or any other sort of
thing? So the definition as written would say that if you have any affiliation with Cornell and you are concurrently an elementary, middle, or high school student, you're included. If you are 29 years old and just taking a class, you're still in. If you are a 14-year-old who's enrolled in the university, you conceivably would not be concurrently enrolled elsewhere, and therefore you're still under the code. The goal is, in essence, say that all the common denominator of all those who are at these camps are enrolled in a, frankly, lower education, so I mean, elementary, middle, or high school education elsewhere. So, moving that, I would argue that's a, I mean, that's technically, so that's a motion to amend. Is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent? Is there a motion to call a question on that amendment? Or any discussion on that amendment? Seeing this figure list is exhausted, the chair puts the amendment. All those in favor of moving the yellow provision to allow it to affect that entire paragraph, please raise your placard. All opposed? Chair abstains by vote 5-0-1. The amendment passes. Moving back into discussion. Is there anyone further on the speaker's list? Is there anyone I'd like to say?
Move it
where? It's going from here to right after there. So right before the if they are. So within that speaker's list is exhausted. That would conceivably lead us to put this question. I would ask the committee though. Is there a desire to, in our resolution, include a provision in the essence, provision adding some of the UA's charter, just saying language to the effect of the University Assembly as co-judicial committee retains or is empowered to investigate or otherwise look at policies and procedures for this excluded group? And the language that we come up with, I would send to the committee for via email.
I think we can just talk about it at the UA.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that this language is probably.
Okay.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah.
When I put this through in the resolution format, I will leave a blank space in the resolution so we have the UA will have the ability to add or strike as they see fit on the floor. That being said, the speaker list is exhausted. The chair puts the question for this provision. All those in favor?
Can you read the provision?
Absolutely. So the amended text, reading the context, is the bullet 2. The term student shall be interpreted to mean also persons not officially registered and not faculty members or other university employees, with the exclusion of any individual enrolled in or taking classes at the university, but still an elementary, middle, high school student, or foreign equivalent, so long as such individuals are subject to written behavioral policies subject to written behavioral expectations, policies, or procedures.
Point of information.
Yes.
Doesn't that now specifically include them? Because that needs to be moved towards the term student with the exclusion of any individual enrolled in subject. Because I think if
placement after student makes more sense.
Yeah, because you can't put it under there because you need to have the enrolled or taking classes. And if you don't move that whole provision, now you've just completely included them.
So,
yeah. So I thought that the amendment was after the word student.
That's why I was going to get enough. Okay, thank you. So what may be proved, in terms of fixing it, what we could do is simply take the yellow text and copy it under B as well. So in essence, it would say where it is in A, and then B would read, currently using university facilities, da 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 da, at the end, with the exception of. So in essence, the exception is in two places and accepts both bullets, and therefore we can dodge some semantic questions. And I did something you wanted to add.
I think it could also be handled by just rearranging it as a third item. So not officially registered, not faculty members of the university employees, and not any individual.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Mr.
Yeah. So if a student is someone who is not officially registered, so a student, as it's currently written, is someone who is not officially registered and not a faculty member or other university employee. So if as long as you meet the following requirements, and so we could just say like after that, and also someone who is not an individual enrolled in or taking classes at the university, right? Like, I feel like that, I think that would have the same effect. I don't know.
Michelle, I may ask, the cuff. On your paper, where did you put this in? So you put in after student. Sorry.
The term student, comma, with the exclusion of any individual enrolled in or taking classes at a university while still in elementary, middle school, or if I'm subject to blah, 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 shall be interpreted to mean also not, gosh, this is I think Eddie to me might just be the easiest one.
Richard.
Why don't you just take the yellow part and make it a part D? So it says A, B, and C, and with this section will exclude any individual, etc. That is really
okay.
Simple.
Yeah, that will pull it out some D.
That would make sense.
This provision.
Instead of duplicating. Yeah.
So then you don't have to worry about.
So in that case, it would just be sub D, anyone, now I'm reworking it to read, any individual enrolled in shall not be considered a student for the definition of this code.
Right.
So to provide language, we have a guest who likes to speak. Traditionally, we require 24 hours notice, but considering that we have to get, I don't believe anyone object. Nate.
Thank you for your forbearance. as a matter of statute building, I would recommend that you instead consider making a section 3 saying no provision of section 2 shall apply to any individual enrolled in or taking class at the university, etc. I think that the best place to put it and still retain most of the structure would be there. Otherwise, frankly, I think you are going to end up, when you do the overhaul, ripping this whole thing out and building it back in as a section entitled definitions with a whole bunch of provisions listed without more context. It's hard to see, but that would be my stopgap recommendation.
Thank you. So that being said, is it in terms of creating a 3 or otherwise, Michelle?
Motion to amend to create a number 3. The code shall not apply to any individual enrolled or taking classes in the student. Without that. So just very much clarify all that. Can I yield to the speaker or to the guest speaker to see if they
go?
Sorry?
So we're creating a bullet 3.
Are you ceding to me?
I am.
She was.
I have a suggestion.
Sorry.
So each one of those says the term student shall be interpreted as. Make the number 3 say the term student shall not be interpreted as any individual enrolled in or taking classes.
Yes.
Based on my experience watching other people mess up statutory construction, I would advise against that just because it then creates it doesn't result in a clear hierarchy between 1 and 2, which have positive definitions, and 3, which has a negative definition. So I would recommend that a section 3 say, the provisions of sections 1 and 2 shall not apply to any person.
That's great.
Okay, so I have language that I think might satisfy this. Can I say it?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we could have a section 3 that would read as follows. Individuals enrolled in or taking classes at the university while still an elementary, middle, high school student, or foreign equivalent, so long as such individuals are subject to written behavioral expectations, policies, or procedures, are not students under the jurisdiction of the campus code of conduct.
Thank you. Is there a second on that? Actually, the motion to amend?
Are not students under the.
The worry is about.
Yeah,
students.
No, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
So just are not covered.
Are not.
Well, and
under
actually,
jurisdiction.
You may, actually, Amber's point, it is conceivable the code makes references to the campus community in other areas. It is conceivable, if your parents are a faculty member or other way, it is conceivable that you could fall under the code through another door if you have, in essence, exceptional circumstances. So, for instance, you are a student, you're also a member of a university student organization, or there are, I could imagine, ways in the code where you might fall through otherwise. So in terms of, this is quite an odd definition of student, which hits 99.99, and it, so in essence, it doesn't, people who then I would imagine would fall into that community group are those who are most likely to want to use the protections in the code otherwise, is that they're going to have connect, they have another connection to Cornell.
Yeah, because again, we are talking about the definition of students.
Yes.
So the key point of that.
So does that work?
I would, from what you've said, I would postulate it does accomplish the intended goal. That being said, I believe there was a second on that amendment. We'll get into discussion. Is there any discussion on the amendment proposed by Gabe? Hearing none, there is no speaker. The speaker is exhausted. The chair puts the question. Gabe, would you mind reading your amendment?
Okay, so this would be a three. So instead of it being under A, it would just be three. And it would read, individuals enrolled in or taking classes at the university while still an elementary, middle, high school student, or foreign equivalent, so long as such individuals are subject to written behavioral expectations, policies, or procedures, are not students under the jurisdiction under the campus code of conduct. I'll put it in the active voice.
So, Dan, to clarify, Dan, do you have that? Okay.
That sounds clear to me.
Thank you. That being said, so there's been all those in favor of that amendment, please raise your placard. All those who are opposed, all who would like to abstain, I vote 5-0-1. The resolution is provision is amended. Moving back into the general discussion on this, is there any further comments or questions on this provision? Hearing none, the speaker looks exhausted. The chair puts the question. All those in favor of it, was there a comment or question that I missed?
No.
Never mind. So all those in favor of this, accepting this provision as written, please raise your hand or placard. All those opposed. All who would like to abstain. The chair abstains. I vote a 5-0-1. This provision is accepted.
We also have to strike that other piece, right? If that occurred in there.
The amendment would have been Robert Rule of Powers to handle housekeeping issues.
But you.
Next.
Now it's in there twice.
I would. Fortunately, Robert Rule gave us an out to handle obvious clerical intent. Moving on to the next provision, which I believe should not take as much time, is proposed language, as Chief Stoner would say. I may have jinxed it. That being said, the next language is proposed language regarding the removal of indefinite suspensions. This relates to the report of the Judicial Codes Counselor, Amanda Minicus, who was JCC 3 and 4 years ago. She gave us a very lengthy report showing or arguing that you had students who are on indefinite suspension where they are, in essence, in a state of limbo. The code currently allows for a suspension of a definite term from 1 to 5 years, or up to 5 years, otherwise expulsion. Her contention was that we should, either you're suspended for up to 5 years, or, in all fairness, for everyone's sake, to expel you and move on with it. And the current judicial code, Michelle has, since becoming JA, has expressed some concurrence with the idea and has not, as such, she does not wish to indefinitely suspend anyone. This has been kicking around for a while ago just to remove this from the code and arguing that you either will have a definite suspension or if it's so egregious that we don't know, we're going to expel you. And then if you want to come back, there are ways to do that through a regular application process. And first on the speaker's list is Michelle.
The only thing that I want to add just as a associate versus something that passes here is just that students who are currently on a definite suspension, because we do have some that are lingering out there,
okay,
they follow the procedures in the code at the time in which they were suspended.
Thank you. I will add that as a note for the resolution.
That's something you don't want to be grandfathered into.
No. that would formalize the limbo.
You said they currently follow.
They would follow the current appeals process until such time as there are none left. Hopefully.
So if they were definitely suspended in 2014, they would do the code at the time of 2014, which they were.
Sarah.
Actually, question for you.
Can you speak to any of these examples? I'm just trying to think of a condition in which it made more sense to like suspend someone indefinitely than just profoundly expel them.
My understanding is that sometimes it's really hard for hearing boards to suspend or dismiss people. So if the idea is that we put through this indefinite timeline, it kind of punts it down the road a little bit. And so from a pedagogical point of view, it's really important for people who are trying to make amends that they have an end date in which they need to accomplish what they need to, and they have the idea that their life can restart at point all of a certain point. So I think it's just been something that was used sporadically, and Dominic's report seems to grant in the same place at all.
And actually, taking that as a point of information, Michelle and I spent a bit of time in their office recently leafing through the public records. In terms of the indefinite suspensions as notated in the public record, they appeared to be areas where the hearing board said, we want you to show growth as a person. One was a theft case, and you stole X thousands of dollars. They appealed a number of times, and they said, you have not made restitution, you have not done X, Y. So in essence, waiting for someone to try and see growth. That being said, my understanding is the hearing boards are able to condition things and they're able to accomplish that goal if we want to see growth through the current process. So in essence, it's three-year suspension, but there are ways to modify that. You accomplish the same goals while still not having you sitting out in limbo. Was anyone else wishing to speak?
Yeah. So at the end where it says a student may not have two negative and credit equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
I'm sorry. Or at the end where it says a student shall not obtain academic credit at Cornell or elsewhere towards the completion of a Cornell degree. Does that mean they cannot take a community college class while they are suspended, and then when reinstated at Cornell, cannot transfer those credits in?
That is correct.
Transfer credits out?
That is, I would imagine they could because they have, assuming they're earned and other institution wishes to accept them,
yep.
And then it takes with knowledge, they are free to, other institutions are free to do as they see fit.
Yes. I can think of a couple of examples of that happening.
Which is fine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And actually, speaking of the devil, that yellow striking is us removing another very long sentence from the code. And also, I went through and attempted to find every indefinite mention of indefinite suspension. After this passes, I will go through and do another check, and I will report back to me if I find any other, but this is everywhere I could find a mention of indefinite suspension in the code. So that being said, are there any other comments, questions, or concerns about this provision? Hearing none, the speaker's list is exhausted. The chair puts this question before the committee. All those in favor of accepting this, please raise your hand or placard. All those who are opposed, all those that abstain, your favor?
Pretty occupied.
Okay, so by a vote of 5-0-1, this is conducted. The next is proposed language regarding misuse of confidential information. And I will provide some background for this, some of their objections. This, for those who are aware, and because it is public record.
Could I have just another copy of the
code? Absolutely. The code itself?
Yeah. No, sorry, not the code itself, just the
changes.
The CMS.
Of course.
Yeah.
Point of information.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The next two, my under the impression that these are not ultimately voted on because this is the first time we've talked about these in a working in a official session.
They were talked about that there's a technical, actually, there is no rule that prohibits us. The goal was, we did talk about them last week and they were circulated. I received actually comments, which I'm about to read. They are eligible for vote and they would go to the UA where they would sit for another at least 4 weeks. But if we have concerns that need to be raised, I would be more than willing to discuss them.
I did.
Of course. No, I appreciate that.
Point of information.
Yes.
4 weeks or 2 weeks?
So when they would come to the UA, they would come there next Tuesday and they'd sit for at least one meeting. So in that case, 3 weeks. I apologize. But the idea is they would sit for this one meeting to allow comment. So in terms of context, for those who are not aware, and because this is a public hearing, there was a hearing in the spring for an individual who leaked a document that was purportedly marked confidential to the Cornell Daily Sun. There was a hearing which was public. The hearing board said what the individual did was wrong, that it was not a violation of the code. After speaking with members of the administration, there was a concern about that there are sometimes needs to operate confidentially and to have people agree. Follow and be held to the agreements they accept, and therefore this is language that is intending to, in essence, narrowly say that if you take your disclosure university document that is denoted in writing to be confidential, where you have previously assented to that confidentiality, is a violation of the code. I have a comment from Professor Lieberwitz on that, which I will read to this committee. The intent behind it, though, is to say that if you agree to be a part of something, you agree to confidentiality, and the documents you're given say they're confidential, and you breach that confidentiality, you've reached your agreement, it is violating the code. And the same idea, there's calculus. If you choose to leak a document, you have to do a balancing act of your own conscience. Are you in favor of this? Are you not? And the hearing board will then, the university can either choose to bring charges, the hearing board is going to enact this process, but this clarifies that to do so would be a violation of the code. On Professor Lieberwitz's points, she stated the following in writing. Actually, 2 weeks ago, she said a comment saying she was concerned it was overbroad. I will note the committee did narrow the language somewhat at our last meeting, but her emails sent earlier today states, on the proposed language regarding misuse of confidential information, as I had stated earlier, I do not believe that we need to add such language to the code. My experience at Cornell is that there's an overly broad use of the term confidential and a significant amount of pressure on individuals to agree to discussions or documents as being confidential. In a university, we should have a strong presumption of openness of documents and information, which can be overcome only by compelling reasons for confidentiality. An example, she provides legal requirements under FERPA. Much information ends up being incorrectly labeled confidential due to some individual's desire, e.g. administrators, to keep information from being public. Simply wanting to keep information public is not adequate justification for calling something confidential. This is true even for information in committees that may be sensitive or even embarrassing if made public. Sensitivity or embarrassment does not necessarily equate to a need for confidentiality. And Professor Lieberts also said, I suggest we consider omitting the language otherwise misuse university or non-university documents from this part of the code. That would be further, not currently under consideration for amendment. But from this portion of the code, I do not know what otherwise misuse means, and it's likely there will be many opinions about what it means. Such language puts individuals or groups in jeopardy of charges and sanctions for a wide range of activities, including making information public. And after noticing that, I will press release with comments, and I actually had hoped to meet with her. They are here, it's obviously the committee will take them for what they are, but they appear to be targeting a good chunk of the overuse of confidentiality in general. In this case, the code is not necessarily what the university should do, it is the code is considering what violations of our community norms are. And if there was a school of thought that was brought up actually in spring when I was talking to them, saying if you agree to confidentiality and then choose to breach it, that is your decision. The concern was primarily with the code is to make it not overbroad so you unwittingly walk into it, which is why the goal of the language is you have to assent. If you agree to confidentiality is a term of entering, you have entered an agreement. And in the real world, that would be likely bound by a written NDA. Here, same idea, here's some responsibility. Person's speakers list is Dale and then Richard.
Thank you for
traditionally, four members are referred to.
My problem with it is if you're going to put it in, I think you need to define what it means to assent to describe confidentiality. Because I think last spring you would have had an argument from the administration saying that the individual did assent to confidentiality, and the individual would say, no, we didn't. I feel like that's really not clear here what that means. Is it a written confidentiality form? Is it going into the meeting and say, oh, I agree to confidentiality terms? I think if that's not clear, it's still equally difficult.
Actually, I had received a comment. Actually, make sure it's because of Jeremy and then Sarah. I had received a comment, and that actually had suggested that it be saying, in essence, had previously assented in writing or other recorded medium to the terms of confidentiality. So to clarify that. But next in the speaker list is Richard.
So I agree with that. I agree with what he said. But if we were to include this, it should read has explicitly assented. That would be one because explicitly was. The entire issue to buy this way. So I'd make it explicitly. I think that would cover it. Though, just the noted in writing to be confidential explicitly, you make that trust. So that if there's any situation in which it's declared to be confidential. Explicit assent has to be previously is not, I think previously is just emotional.
Yeah. Well, so previously, when it was drafted, the previously was intended to, in essence, not have you, oh, you're in, oh, and after you see everything, oh, by the way, it's confidential, to in essence said you must go in eyes wide open, because there is a that having
better. Explicitly.
Okay. So in that case, I presume you'd like to change previously to explicitly.
Explicitly.
Is there any, just in terms of general, an idea where we are? Next introduced is Jeremy.
That covered what I was going to say.
Thank you. Next is Sarah.
Yeah, me too. Okay. Does this mean the university gets to turn whatever is confidential?
What it would mean is that in terms of violating the code, if, say, I, as an individual, I'm going to serve on a working group, and I walk in and they tell me it's confidential to serve on it, you must agree in writing that this is confidential. And by signing that, I am agreeing to it. Then if I were to then breach that confidentiality by disclosing the documents, I am then violating the code of conduct. The university in this case would have control of what is confidential, but the idea is that if you agree to it, you have agreed to it, and moving forward, if you choose to break that agreement, it is a violation of the code. So it doesn't really, the idea of what we overuse confidentiality too much, which is a point that I personally have seen, but is not the discussion here, that's a separate from what happens when you agree to confidentiality and then breach that.
I just feel like, I mean, like, if we're, like, in this room and, like, someone says something, like, there was a document that was supposedly confidential, I didn't think it wasn't, like, I think it's very unlikely that I would just, like, leave the room and not participate in this conversation just because I don't want, like, just, like, I might want to leave here.
That is, thank you. The next on the speaker's list is Michelle.
So this is actually kind of the first time that I saw this language, and to me it sounds like this is something that I think feels a little bit rushed to me. I think it's really important to understand from the other assemblies how this might work with faculty working groups, senate working groups. And so I would actually prefer to table this and let the university assembly meet with some of the other constituencies and say, how would this provision impact the work that you do on a daily basis? So for example, how are these documents stored? Who maintains them? Who's the record keeper for these processes? And so I think, again, I don't have a thought either way. My job is just to enforce which I'll pass. But I think that this would affect a lot of working groups and committees across the university. I don't think we've got to there on it yet.
Next,
thank you.
Next, Jeremy.
Sorry, I agree with what you said, Michelle. I do want to point out that one of the issues, the primary issue that we're trying to address here is people being charged for breaching confidentiality without any agreement having been made. So we're trying to add a protection in here so that it has to be really blatant in order for you to get charged for breaching confidentiality. However, I think that there really should be a limitation set on who is able to make a determination of confidentiality. Just restrict this down a little bit to Cornell University officials or something where not everybody can say my chem lab homework is confidential and I'm going to show it, you know, whatever. Just a bit of a restriction. So I'm not sure how to work that in. I think it does need a little more looking at, because we don't want to set it so overly broad that it starts getting misused regularly. First, having said that, this is going to pass under the UA and we're going to do a full review of the code after this. So there is something to be said for letting the UA hash on some of the specifics of that wording while we continue on with some of the other work. I'm just putting that out there for thought.
Thank you. And just on that, I will note that it has been communicated to us that the administration is looking, they refer a code halt, which I think, based on discussion of this committee, is advisable either way. But the idea with this is to do one last crack through, handle the fires, put them out, and then move into the review. Actually, in this case now, look at the hate speech issue. But the goal is to get this done ASAP, to push it through. So the question is, if this doesn't get done now, the code overall could take a considerable amount of time. The question is it good enough to be put to the UA while we handle logistics and have 3 weeks to go figure out that is a decision only the committee can make, but in disclosure. Next in speaker list is Gabe.
So I was just gonna say that I think so on your point, I agree with Jeremy. I think that it's okay if we do put this language through now and let the UA UA members will see this on their agenda and hopefully do their jobs and communicate with their constituents about this before they vote. But I think that maybe just a solution to the issue of like who can make things confidential. I think maybe we could use the a clearly identifiable university official acting in an official capacity. That way, like a student can't be like, my homework is confident. I mean, well, can't plagiarize my homework, but I think that would put in a level of reasonableness that like a hearing board will, you know, might be able to use. That's just a thought that I had. I don't know what the, you know, what the committee would think. So that's just a thought that popped into my head that I wanted to put out there.
Thank you. And just for context, then keep the ROB in context. Thank you. Is that if we do vote this out, we do not cease to exist, because next Wednesday the UA will first look at it. We can still discuss it if desired. I will certainly be speaking to individuals and trying to narrow it. And I've actually, Dave's comment is something that I had also had toyed around with in terms of trying to avoid long sentences, but if we're trying to be narrow, that may be proved. Next is speaking to is Richard.
I think postponing it is a good idea. I think there's quite a bit of diversity from Teresa and this committee. So I think we need to think it out. I'm personally, I can't imagine a working group that with this should be confidential, but not with people to send to it in a written form. I mean, confidentiality isn't, in that situation, is an oxymoron. If you're going to restrict free speech, it should be formally done. And if it's not, you know, you're not going to do it, you don't do it in a fuzzy way. So I'm with Risa, in Risa's corner somewhere on this. I do think it's an important issue. Confidentiality is meant, this kind of thing is meant to restrict free discussion. Be very clear about that. And it can be reasonable in some places and unreasonable in others, but boy, this is right to the heart of freedom of speech and freedom of communication. So I do think there's enough range of opinion that we really should talk about it.
I agree with tabling it. I think there's more discussion to be had on it. I actually disagree with narrowing it, because I can think of a lot of student-led committees that would be appalled that they couldn't keep their information confidential and try to do so anyway. We can't list every way we want to make it confidential. I also actually disagree with that it restricts free speech. I actually find, in my experiences with it, it allows people to speak freely, because they don't worry about things that they might misspeak on, ideas that they propose that are not popular, being then quashed and at least brought to the table so they can be discussed, thrown away, labeled as racist, labeled as discriminatory, labeled as what they are, but people then won't speak to them, and then we have another problem. So I see it. I do understand where it comes from, a place of preventing free speech because people don't even know they should be talking about it. But I also see it as opening up free speech because people allow themselves to have a frank conversation there as they would if they thought that they were going to be the next YouTube video.
Thank you. Don't get the time. It is 5:45. Our meeting is technically at a close. That being said, I believe we're coming to a conclusion as other areas with luck are relatively more stable. I'd request if anyone objects the motion to extend the meeting to 15 minutes. Is there any dissent?
Are you going to lose quorum if I have to leave?
We will not.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Jeremy. Have a good evening. So, actually, you're on the speakers next, so if you'd like to make a final remark.
Okay, really quick. Thank you, Chief Soder. That made a lot of sense to me. And having been through some of like the staff development programs during the Creating a Culture of Respect, where you're put in really uncomfortable situations intentionally, there are really good reasons, particularly in learning process, to keep some things private just for out of courtesy, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that makes sense to me.
And also, actually, just finally, is to notice that some student groups, I'm aware the student assembly, when they handle their bylines, I mean, the packets are confidential and the members must sign a written agreement.
So they're just byline funding.
I understand that the student assembly members have to sign a written agreement to confidentiality for the byline. So, therefore,
yes.
Question, limiting it for freedom, it's university official may prevent that. So that being said, next on the speaker list was Richard, and then Jennifer, do you want to go?
So I agree with both those things, but just know that if you have a written form, then that solves the problem. I just want it explicit. And when people in
the informal, we're in agreement on that.
On the same
I think we have just a little more conversation to have about it, which is why I agree with the proposal.
So in that case, knowing the time I would put toward this committee, as I said before, the university president must accept any change or make to the code. They have expressed an informal desire to, in essence, move on with their overhaul, but we're trying to do one last crack. The committee can either table this, and it may or may not, if you pass it later, it may or may not get approved by the president, or otherwise the committee can advance to the UA, and we can still work on it and amend it. We can do, there's a whole plethora of things we can do, but in essence, just being aware that tabling it, we run the risk of it dying due to just attrition because we have other things on our agenda. So that is something the committee should be aware of. That being said, that has exhausted the speaker's list. So in terms of entertaining any ideas or motions.
Motion to table.
There's a motion to table.
Yeah.
There's a second. Is there any, actually table until when?
Actually,
yes.
A motion to postpone.
We can do that. So what we could do.
I mean, that we, tabling is never, ever that.
Yes.
Postponement means it has to come up in the future.
Yes.
So what, could we?
I accept the motion to postpone.
Yes.
So motion to postpone. I second Michelle's now revised motion to postpone.
So I presume postpone until the next meeting.
Yeah.
Okay. And then in terms of, I will, if the committee is not there, I will inform the UA that we're considering this. We may add it. If this may, this would delay the code changes by a week if possible. But again, considering that this, the prior hearing, I have speaking with administrators, they believe it opened, it identified a hole in the code and made them a little skittish in terms of involving individuals who they believe are more likely to leak if they know they have no recourse. So I will notify the assembly that this will be coming through, assuming there are objections from the members present. So in that case, there's a motion to table. There is our motion was postponed to the next meeting. There is a second. Is there any dissent? Hearing none, all those in favor of postponing this to our next meeting, please raise your hand or placard. All those opposed? All who would like to abstain? Chair abstains by a vote of 4-0-1. This is postponed to our next meeting. Moving on to the next provision. This is proposed language clarifying UHRB appointment procedures. This is simply aligning our prior practice with what we, our language, what we do. It states that if you are a student entering your last year of study, you get a one-year term instead of a two-year term. We've been doing that, although not technically through the code, we've just been doing it through practice. And it also says that if you're currently on the committee and you wish to serve for a second term, the CJC would review it, and the UA is then free to reappoint you. Traditionally, what we have done is we would reach out to the OJA or in the hearing board chair and say, are there any reasons someone who's currently serving should not be reappointed? I don't think we've ever heard that anyone should be, but assuming that they pass muster, they will then be reappointed. This is just a matter of the institution knowledge is valuable, but it's also important to align what we actually do with our policies and code. On that, are there any comments or questions or concerns for this proposal? So there's a move. There's a. We will get. I will bring what we discussed last week in terms of. This is unfortunately kind of. I'm happy to stay as long late as possible or as late as necessary.
Okay.
Well, in that case, we can. We actually have two other things after this, but we can limit this to 5 minutes and then move on to that. Or that being said, we can go out of order. My concern is that this is the timeliness of getting this to the UA.
Okay. I'm just ready.
Understood.
I mean, this is.
Okay. So there's a motion to move.
Second.
Yes. Second. Hearing none, all those in favor, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed? All abstained? 4-0-1. That accepted. The next procedure is proposal clarifying the JA appointment procedure. This one is also a timeliness matter. The long story short, the current code says that the JA can be reappointed, but it says, and I. Through a typo, which is a historical matter, which I'd be happy to discuss with you offline, anyone offline, is that in October of the year prior to JA's term expiring, the UA must convene a search committee. That is not what we have done. That is not, I don't believe it is what the chair of the UA intends to do. That being said, it is important that we fix the code again to align practice with the procedure. This also incorporates a prior written comment in the reports of the JA that they do not believe they receive enough feedback or are in touch with members of the community in terms of receiving feedback on their behavior. This provision says that 6 months prior to the termination of a JA term, in terms of, in essence, it used to be the JA terms were January to January, which is why October is built in. That is, those have been decoupled. So 6 months prior to the expiration of the term, a committee will be convened that mirrors roughly a search committee. They will provide feedback and recommend to the president whether they in essence, reappoint or not reappoint at least 4 months prior to the expiration of the term. and then the procedure will then come through the standard procedure for reappointment. The idea is to allow the community to provide individuals from all areas to provide feedback, and also for the current provision, if we would like to remove a JA, is they'd have to be voted down at the UA, which is very public, and in essence firing them. This, on paper, would enable, in the event there is dissatisfaction with the JA, again, no comments, this is make and take, no comments about the current JA. Most of the committee, is all hold in very high regard. That being said, the idea is that if there's concerns that need to be handled, there is a way for a more graceful exit in terms of that the JA may themselves decide not to seek another term, or it can be done a little more quietly, and then the JA can then find that it has time to find new employment before being, quote unquote, fired. So first on the speakers list, and I do apologize if someone raised their hand first, actually Michelle, I remember that, and then Gabe.
I'm going to excuse myself for this conversation for obvious reasons. My only thing is that the UA passed a resolution to change the assembly's role in their charter. That seems to conflict with this current proposal, so whatever. My other question to y'all as we'll discuss it is, does that also mean that the assembly charter is going to change to reflect this new change, or just making sure there's not a conflict with that?
I recall it. The idea of it is, and I will verify that, but the idea is to, in essence, the UA's charter now says the provision in the code is what we follow?
Nope. It says the way that it's charted is that the assembly must approve the reappointment of the JA, ombudsman, JCC, but if there's a vacancy, then the second part of this provision, which triggers the search committee, is enacted. So the search committee is not enacted unless there's a vacancy. So I'm going to leave this to y'all, and I'm going to excuse myself from this conversation with that. So just,
great.
I don't want us to have a...
Thank you. And actually, after looking at, I will verify in more detail. I did review this. I'm not, Michelle, I ask, what are you seeing that would cause the conflict?
So,
the event of a vacancy, we follow the procedure in the code.
Yeah, so if there's a vacancy. So this one's, the way that it seems to amend it is that the president says, this is who I would like to appoint or reappoint.
And then we confirm.
Confirm. The way that you're saying is that you first make the recommendation up.
No. The UA would not make the recommendation. The committee would. So the UA's official role would be, so this, for instance, with the search committee. So
you're creating a committee structure that seems to violate this, because this one's saying is that the president is the one who makes the recommendation, and then... if there's a vacancy, then it needs to be followed in the procedure. What you're saying is that you're creating a committee structure which would supersede this. So whatever that.
Thank you. And
yep.
I appreciate you pointing out the intent, and we can verify the language if necessary, is to, in essence, the committee would recommend to the president, who would then have the final say, and then ask the UA. We can and we'll fix that part of the charter. I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. So next on the list is Gabe.
Okay, so I sponsored the code, the charter change, the UA's charter 2 years ago or so now. So I can speak a little bit to the UA's charter and also to how this would interact, because I was on the search committee that chose the last JA. I was actually the chair of this committee when that happened. But basically, so the way that this would work is the president knows that you know, he or she should not just like make an appointment and hope that the UA confirms. And so what the president does is the president essentially like in the code, there's a structure to make a recommendation to the president, who then makes the formal appointment to the UA. And so the president is essentially saying, I mean, by it being in the code, the president is saying, like, you give me a list of options and I will make an appointment. And I'm making this appointment in good faith with the university assembly, because you put forth the list of names to me, and so I'm hoping that you will confirm this person. And so the power to appoint still resides in the president, and so I don't think it would conflict with the UA's charter as I read it. In the event that it does conflict, the code always takes precedent. And so if we do need to clarify something in the UA's charter, that is entirely possible.
Thank you, and actually on that, I agree. Reading it, I do not interpret the conflict. We can fix it. I would have to concur with that. That being said, also, having been on the executive vice chair of the assembly when we last did a reappointment, myself and the chair, well, worked with the president's court at the time to go through and run through it. This is just meant to formalize that process, and hopefully we can move forward. Chief Zoner?
I hadn't noticed this until we got started, so I admit to not having a clear understanding of it, but to that point, it makes it muddier for me. This Michelle had to say, and I agree, if there's a vacancy, I agree we have a procedure by which we replace someone. If we don't have a vacancy, you would want to know why you would want to reappoint someone. Mm-hmm. There would be a procedure why you would recommend that person not be reappointed. But that's not the same thing as creating a search committee. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell the difference between the two right now. So I feel very uncomfortable without reading this more. And it sounded like there was even conflict amongst people proposing of interpretation. So I agree with documenting in the code the way that we do things. I don't understand that what's in yellow is actually how we're doing things. It seems not like how we do things.
And to clarify, in terms of Michelle's argument that the UA's charter conflicts with this, I will go through and review it with a fine tooth comb after this, depending on the time. After reading it and I reviewed the charter, UA's charter prior to even looking at this language, I don't believe it will, our charter conflicts with this. That aside, this is also attempting to, the JA's report, Mary Beth Grant, she said in public session UA and her written reports, she felt she was not given enough feedback.
Right.
And there are other, actually, there's some other things that are behind this that I would be happy to play offline that I'm subject to a confidentiality agreement on myself. But the idea now is that we will formalize a process. They wanted more feedback. The code right now says you need to have a search committee ostensibly so that you can, in essence, search and then re-recommend the JA. That is silly. The idea here is we're going to go through, we're going to provide feedback. You have 2 months to do it. And then with 4 months gap, you can either say, in essence, recommend the president up, down. The president can and will do as he or she sees fit. And then it'll go to the UA to be confirmed or not for another 2-year term. The idea is also, though, there were some concerns that if the last check is the UA publicly saying up or down, we're almost never going to say down, barring something cataclysmic, because it's unseemly and hopefully wouldn't have got that point. The idea now is if there's concerns, it can be ironed out earlier, or if there's systemic concerns, we can address those more seemly.
Yeah, but procedurally, I mean, even though it looks like there's time here, what you're really talking about is a person who might be in that position, depending on the UA schedule, depending on schedule of meetings, tabling and voting and sessions and whatnot, you could be 2 weeks away from when you should be starting your next term and then find out you are now terminated. So I'm concerned about the timelines. Mm-hmm. The charter, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure you guys can clear that up. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about that. I'm concerned about the timeline. I'm concerned mm-hmm. about the procedure being, I agree that there should be more feedback, but I don't agree that it should be attached directly to the reappointment mm-hmm. process. I mean, it will influence the reappointment process, but to have it be formed for the purpose of, are you good enough to stay in this job, feels mm-hmm. awkward.
It's always awkward.
Yeah.
I think, read the language three times. I think it works, and I do think it's awkward. I do think that somehow it's unavoidable that the committee received the information and considered. I can see this committee being very, very fast. I mean, the committee does not have to be fine. Last 20 minutes or something. And I can't think of a better way to do it. What we talked about last time is moving it forward so that the judicial administrator things went badly. I think 6 months does that. So I would support this. It goes badly, but in that case, we change it. But it has to be changed, and this is reasonable.
In terms of the...
So to provide more context, the UA Executive Committee actually got a request, essentially from the JA. The JA essentially asked the Office of the Assemblies to ask the Executive Committee to basically change what is in the campus code of conduct before October. Because the way it's currently written, I, as the chair of the UA, will be I won't be in compliance with the code if I don't convene a search committee to find a replacement for Michelle, even though she's not leaving. And so that's the problem. It's basically a leftover from a code change 10 years ago. And so, like, we were actually prompted to do this. This isn't something that, like, we initiated.
No, I understand that.
Yeah, and so, you know, and then just to clarify everything, I might be wrong, but the way I read this is that there will, like, the committee will essentially only exist for 2 months. It'll get convened.
At maximum.
Right, at maximum. It'll convene, and it will be a committee that has the authority to recommend to the president not to reappoint someone, not to reappoint the JA. And at the same time, like, with that authority, like, presumably it would be able to make, like, serious advice to the JA, and it would be able to do so in a way that's, like, if you're not, like, doing what the community wants, then, like, we're going to find someone else. And, like, my opinion is that that is, like, the UA's prerogative, and I think that it should exercise that prerogative. I think that it's impossible, given what is written, and I might be reading it incorrectly, it's impossible for someone to just wake up, like, for the JA to wake up one day and be like, oh, I'm out of a job, because the recommendation has to come at least 4 months before their term is over. And so they wouldn't be able to, like they would have to see it come in. It's essentially how I've interpreted it. But if we can make it more clear, I'm all for it. I'm not wedded to this language.
The intent is to try and prevent trial by surprise where they get reappointed, they go to the UA, and
yeah.
For instance, they say that because the way we do search committees, generally once you're the last step is the last stop is the UA, and generally it's just for public airing. The idea is to do that. You mentioned earlier concern about votes. This, the whole idea is to have it separate from the UA. The UA, or since not separate, but it's a set. The UA itself, in essence, puts this in the code. This will run like the, for instance, like the JCC search committees do. They are handled. They come back to the UA, hopefully even sooner than you now, and say we've recommended. They tell the chair pretty much that we've recommended the president reappoint. President will reappoint if not, or they say for X, Y, and Z, the JA doesn't want reappointment. We're not going to reappoint. Whatever, and then the search committee will continue because this past time. Due to some interesting issues. The JA, we had the associate JA running the JA's office for about 6 months while we conducted the search. The idea is to give us as much lead time as possible to minimize any gaps in continuity. Keith, do you want to?
Actually, I think Richard was first.
No,
I'll do it first.
Okay. All I can say is I hear two things. One is we have a fix that we need to immediately do, otherwise we have to meet a search committee. And to me, that's a more simple fix is to say for the interim process, if there's a vacancy, there's no vacancy right now, unless she walks in the door and says, I'm out, right? So you can prevent the issues that are coming up in October more simply without having, I'm not disagreeing that something needs to be done. More so than that, my concern is just, it feels, my apologies because I've missed prior meetings, but this is new, and it doesn't feel like it's something that we should take lightly because it is a person's position. And yet I also agree that there should be a very clear way to remove an office of judicial administrator, which we have removed someone that's absolutely against. I know from experience that a six-member committee is A, hard to convene, B, almost impossible to get agreement on, and C, absolutely does not represent the voices of our very large campus. So that concerns me. So I want to have more discussion about how we get the feedback. Where does the feedback come from? Who makes the judgment calls? And even though I know it's not a deciding vote, I get that. I get that it's a recommendation, and I'm not concerned about sitting JA. I've been on this committee long enough to know what the term skippy JA means. But I am concerned that we do right by our constituency and fix the problem of not having to enact a search committee by October. So I guess by way of that, I'm proposing that we change the language to say, if there is a vacancy, then these procedures are enacted for an interim solution, and then continue on with this discussion.
Thank you. Actually, that was noting the time again, we have run out, and we will get to the free speech, and I will say it. We discussed it last week, and I will provide information to this and the UA. Well, my apologies. In terms of this, what we could do is, in essence, when I type something resolution format, I will enact some language that will, in essence, say only a vacancy, the Band-Aid proposed, and we'll table this language to our next meeting so we may have a more formal discussion. I guess, in this case, even though it's not standard, I am motioning to do that. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent? All those in favor, please raise your hand or placard. All those opposed, abstain. 4-0-1 is moving. And actually, this very quickly, which last 2 minutes. The last thing is proposed language, adding discretion to contact directives. This is also doing something that the prior JCC's report brought up. In essence, when you're given a contact directive, previously, there were issues where it's given one person, and the other person was antagonistic, intentional, trying to intentionally induce someone to accidentally or otherwise violate their contact directive. Michelle has stated she agrees with that and has only been issuing ones that are mutual, so that, in essence, it's you stay away from you, you stay away from you, with the intent of minimizing contact, period. This will say that they must be binding on all parties. It also says that the JA does not require to automatically suspend you if you violate it. Again, there are issues in the past where someone incidentally walked, and they, therefore, question is to our discretion. We are low on time, but if there are any comments, questions, or concerns, Richard?
I move to approve.
Okay. Any dissent? Hearing none, all is in favor. Say your hand, Blackguard. All opposed. All abstained. 4-0-1. That's approved. Thank you very much. I'll check this the way. And then on the hate speech reasons, we just lost quorum, but I'm free to stay. And Charlie, just remind recording this last thing. The technical adjournment time will be 6:07. That being said, at our last meeting, we were able to have a very fairly robust discussion about this. Unfortunately, the timeliness of this did subsume our meeting today. But in essence, what the plan on paper is I have actually, the first step was I went through and looked at every public record for every hearing board that is accessible to see what the idea of where does harassment currently fall in terms of definitional. There is some evidence on the record and some prior decisions that harassment has been used to cabin egregious incidents in the past. The question, of course, is how is our current definition of harassment handle that? The committee at our last meeting was discussing primarily how do you ensure that balance. I wish to ban hate speech while still protecting free speech, freedom of expression. We went over the fact that I reviewed about 60 various codes, and Jeremy Cruiser has done similar. He sent some links out, which I'll happily forward to anyone interested. In essence, some universities that have done it, the negative side effects have included, bless you, one campus where the college Republicans were thrown off campus due to a political point of view. I would argue that's an unintended side effect. The other one where the only people who were charged under it were African-American students because they were reported to have violated by Caucasian students. I would also argue that it's not the intent of this. But the question, of course, is how do you balance it? There was a discussion about, in essence, reminding that the president must approve our decisions, that we are going to hopefully reach out to their office, at least figure out where they stand. There's a number of President Politan made repeated, numerous, and very clear statements about her desire to keep freedom of expression. Again, this is also why the CDC was looking at the harassment definition of, okay, if the administration is angling, saying we are free speech, free speech, free speech, and they have not deviated at all in the slightest, the question, of course, is, well, what are we really trying to ban? If it's hate speech that causes negative effects, can we do that through harassment? How can we explore that while still doing something that protects free speech, protects freedom of expression and free speech in minimizing or eliminating bad effects? We agree that's not a silver bullet. We are hoping to hold a public forum, likely coming after fall break. Actually, law students get that full week off, which is quite convenient. So it'll likely be the full week after fall break in terms of scheduling, to have a community forum trying to determine that. And now this is done, after this is truly off our docket, this will be our top priority until the end of semester. Our goal also is to have something to the UA, hopefully by the middle of November, so that it can have some language. That being said, members of the committee were arguing that it's their opinion that if we are in progress and getting close, they would rather tell the UA, here's what we have, we'd ask for more time, with the intent that the president does have to prove this, and our goal is to minimize side effects. As we saw with this language, even how you place something in the code, if you aren't exceptionally careful, you can inadvertently open up loopholes. And that is where we are. Timeline is, in essence, to continue the discussion, have an open forum a week or so after fall break, and then hopefully have something at the UA by the middle of November. There are some other details in terms of just our goal is that we are sending our agendas are open, our meetings are public. We had 3 guests today. Thank you for coming. If you have any questions or would like to be on our email list, let me know and I can ensure you are added. Our goal is to loop in the community as much as possible. I am also going to be reaching out to various organizations that have expressed interest. I've already heard from the Federal Society of the Law School expressing their concern and encouragement to be cautious. They also condemn hate speech in that vein, passed everyone that forward. But the idea that there are a considerable number of unintended side effects we could stumble into, that this must be done with care. Any questions, comments, concerns? Yeah.
It appears like I thought we were on the same page, and we may not be. So I'm going to try to communicate that a number of student leaders met to sort of discuss just everything going on. This included the student trustees, me and Gabe, so if you can correct me if I misrepresent, please do. A number of the graduate students and professional students. So we were wondering whether the CJC might form an ad hoc committee to focus specifically on hate speech, thus in some ways doubling the amount that the CJC is able to take on because there is so much on your docket, and allowing a smaller group to really streamline their attention to not just crafting language, but to soliciting the type of community feedback that Dean Fanlon managed for the calendar committee. So I think Rena has already assembled. Rena, president of GPSA, has already assembled a website survey asking for people's thoughts on, is it the current hate speech? On one aspect of what we already have. So it appears that there are multiple tracks operating, and I am hoping we can
bring them together. I hate to say that is news to me. I wish I would have been looked in, because even just in terms of logistics, the committee was charged, the committee was operating. Mm-hmm. We had considered, and in terms of a working group, what floated was, at least for the initial point, that once this is gone, hey, my life will be a little bit easier, which is quite convenient. But the logistical idea was to do at the very least, the committee looked at the high picture to at least narrow it down, because if I, to be blunt, looking at the Community Bill of Rights Working Group, we gave them a very broad charge, and it sputtered. And the idea is to the full committee to have some idea of where we're going and where we're driving. Are we driving towards harassment as the best vehicle that can work? Looking at where our definitions go in the past, and also working with the fact that if the community wants something that the administration is actually going to implement, the best way, there's an essence of balancing act. The CJC is always, the president's politics, we always hear from both sides, that are the UA's goal, as you're aware. So therefore, the fact that the president has made numerous statements that she is very much in favor of his speech. Yes.
I should also represent that the discussion brought up that the president's public is unlikely to approve anything that would satisfy the groups that raised the issue. And we actually began to side against the initial inclinations of several of us towards shaping perhaps aspirational language, seeing the role as UA and assembly system to represent what the community wants, regardless of whether it's implementable. So there's multiple issues in play, clearly.
Thank you. I will, next week we'll have a more discussion. In the past, the CJC has, the last big, I guess, contentious issue that came up with this committee was reasonable advance notice. And I didn't know what that was. And the CJC, president requested that the CJC spend 6 months to tell them no. And there was a lot of discussion then in terms of what is the role of the CJC. Again, the committee is free to move its seats. But the goal was that if it has no shot in heck of getting through, we've got a code, we have, the president has asked for a code revision. And the idea is that we work part and parcel and hand in glove with the administration, that if they're telling us these are our concerns, we should not ignore them. We shouldn't take them as binding. But that being said, they frame our discussion, and that if the president's primary concern is free speech, it highlights to this committee that we need to be careful of it. We will certainly, and that the committee will examine and frame something that hopefully will work. Aspirational language and concert, I think, is fantastic, and I'm sure this committee will consider it. And we may even come up with a document saying, here's what we recommend goes in the code, here's what we'd like to see go in the code to gauge response. But the idea is that something is better than nothing. That being said, we are certainly, I'm sure the committee will discuss it, and if we get in, once we can narrow it down for a working group, we'll get to that point. So next person is Gabe, and then to Rob.
So I think that procedurally the best way that we could attack something as broad and complex as including a hate speech amendment in the campus code of conduct is to charge some sort of subcommittee of this committee to really hammer out language, because I mean, one, there's just like the logistical problem. We're already meeting twice as frequently for pretty much twice as long. So we're already meeting like four times as much as we normally do. And so I think that it makes sense because there's obviously a community interest in the issue. And so as the chair of the UA, I would recommend charging a subcommittee, tasking one of the members of the committee with, you know, looking at some language and then bringing that to the CJC for more formal review. And so that's, you know, that's what I would recommend to the committee. I think that in terms of what our philosophy is on, you know, what sorts of things should we pursue, I think that, you know, our job is to represent our constituents and to vote in the way that we think is best for them. And so I think that, you know, if, you know, and we can talk more about this offline, you know, if you think that it's in the best interest of our constituents to pursue something like this and make a statement about it, then I think that's a completely legitimate, you know, course of action. But on the other hand, you know, how much time do you want to spend on something that, you know, might not get the traction you want? And so I think that is that's a political calculus that each member has to make for themselves. And so I think that, you know, that's just my stance on it.
So. Thank you. I will bring those forward at our next meeting when we're actually in session. The committee will, is it the UA traditionally has kind of the idea that when you're on the UA, you vote in the best interest of the university. Actually, prior we have said that you are, in essence, keeping the ideas in your minds, your constituency at the forefront of your mind, but also realizing that we're looking at university-wide policy. Part of this is I am a student, I represent them, but if X is best for the university, that the hope is you would do that. But then, Sarah, I'll
just kind of two things. So first, to Anna's point, mentioning about President Pollack, I do sort of agree with free speech as long as it's within certain barriers and restraints. So I'm just wondering, like, why not even include her on this process or someone who she, I don't know.
No, she, it is not your fault. You've waded into a very law of, CJC, and we work hand in glove. The administration, due to community concerns about that they may be over-influencing the code, traditionally is low to interact directly with the committee because of their ideas. We are the community, we act as independent as possible, and they will nudge us and provide back-channel feedback. They are generally low to directly engage. That being said, it is my intent to reach out and provide the offer. What the administration does with it is, as always, is their prerogative.
Okay. And then one quick thing to engage in mentioning with the committee, like the subcommittee, kind of mentioning what you said a little bit earlier about the representation piece, like who would be represented on that committee, you know what I'm saying? Like who in that subcommittee is basically, you know, voicing their opinions for the rest of the university. That's 4,000 people,
yep.
Or students at least, 14,000.
I mean, you totally agree, 14,000.
Yeah, basically, how do you, I agree actually with a small group coming up with language,
yeah.
But there needs to be some sort of hopper that it gets run through and everybody has the opportunity to this over several different aspects. You know, posting it on a website, post your comments here, all kinds of stuff comes through. And this is a place where we're going to have to do that. It's going to have to be open forum, so we're not bumping up against confidentiality issues.
Yes.
Well, I'd say this, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. We got to say what we need to say, aspirational or otherwise. Whatever we come up with has to be enforceable, and if we're already arguing about small words like other misuse, then you know there's no way we're going to land on anything that we can enforce. So we need to come to something that answers this, but we need to come to it by public consensus, and that's long, impossible, and yet we're going to do it. You know, I think that we have practice in this through other venues that. That we've learned with our last free speech efforts that we did. It took quite some time. But I think that there's an opportunity for us to go ahead with aspirational, because there's nothing wrong with that. As long as people are understanding that what your aspiration is may not be what your aspiration is, and it may not be what your aspiration is. So I know I represent a group in and of itself that feels like there's you can say anything you want to us, and we still have to take it on the chin. And that doesn't feel good either. So we want to make sure that whatever we're doing applies uniformly to everyone, which may dilute some that need more, but we'll bring up those that have received less.
Thank you. We are well over time. Are there any other comments, questions, or concerns? Hearing none, thank you very much for coming. If anyone wants, anyone's not in our emails and like to be added, please let me know. I can make sure I can do that. Anna, I think you are supposed to be on it.
Thanks.
If you can get your net ID, I will certainly add you to the envelope server to get the agenda and all the readheads. Thank you, David. Have a good night.
I will reach out to Rila and ask her to send over.
Thank you. I would appreciate it. Just a matter
of time. She has it all from the calendar.
Yes.
She and Charlie did that.
Oh, absolutely.
So intensively.
Yes. Well, and it's this is also actually.
And like the sooner we can get that going, the more transparent.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that's
it.
Very weird to see.
Time is the. Time is the biggest thing. Because even outside of this, there's an urgency to this. Everything is, when everything is urgent, you sit there and you go, God, what do I do?
I know.
So hopefully.
That's part of why we
ended
doing ad hoc to that.
Be
that narrow mind focus that doesn't track from
the
broad, huge overall.
Yes. Well, that's just a key surprise. There will be a lot to look at. Maybe another statement.
So we'll vote.
I don't know who you put in charge of that.
I was working with Connor Hodges. He's an undergrad.
You just need to think about when the best.
He's been on the committee for a long time. He's a senior now. He's.
I've
worked with him for years. I trust him. He's level-headed, but he also has. I mean, he has. He also.
Yeah.
He's a protester. He's run protests. I mean, he's seen both sides. So he's. He's seen how the University of Michigan can use language in the code.
Yeah.
And that's why he even said, again, if we do this broadly, the university might say, oh, this hates you, we're going to shut it. Again, because remember, everything you put in the code, you can imagine, not only to use it, everyone can use it. The hardest part is, you need to get SNIDs to justify, you can actually import out of this. I ended the meeting, and we are all set. Thank you very much.